this is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Y'allitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
Hey guys, welcome back to Y'allitics. We're at an old haunt of ours, an early haunt of ours, an old haunt of mine.
Yeah,
in West Dallas.
You could say this is kind of where it all started, so cheers.
Yeah, cheers, absolutely. We're at a place called Cibo Divino. It's an Italian marketplace, but they have great Texas craft beers on tap, and they have great pizza and great steak and great salads, pastas, etc. But we did our very first promo at the end of this same table right here.
Yeah, we don't back change in 2019. Much, do we?
It's all come full circle.
We even picked the same table all these years later. That was back in early, I guess it was mid-2019 before we even did episode one. How many episodes are we up to now, Daryl?
323, I think. Isn't that right?
Oh, he just took a sip. Yeah. I used to be a waiter and a bartender, by the way, and I loved asking people how everything was right after they'd stuff a bite or a big sip.
Pretty good, huh?
Yeah.
I think it was 323, maybe 330s. Where were you a waiter and bartender?
Papados.
Really?
Yeah.
In Dallas or in Houston?
Yeah, in Houston.
Huh. One on 45, Gulf Freeway?
No, it was across from the old Astrodome.
Oh, NRG down on 610 now, on South Loop.
Yep.
Wow.
It was a hopping place, man.
And you waited tables and you bartended?
I was a head waiter and bartender.
Head waiter?
Yes.
Of course.
Head waiter.
Hey, if you know Wheeler, you know he wants to be on top the entire time.
You make bigger money.
Do you really?
Yeah, absolutely.
I never waited tables, so.
Wow. But, I can tell.
Yeah, can you?
Yeah.
I worked at a barbecue stand, but what are you having here?
Well, what are you having
first? So I thought it was the same beer.
No, mine's a little lighter.
Yours is a little lighter. I'm having the Hefeweizen from Oak Cliff Brewing Company just down the road here.
Because this is Y'allitics, and we do have Texas craft beers on this podcast.
Is that an Asahi, a Japanese beer?
It is not. What kind of restaurant are we at right now?
We're in that's a...
I couldn't resist. The Birra Moretti.
Yeah, Birra Moretti.
It is I think it's an Italian Pilsner.
It is.
And, you know,
it's good.
No disrespect to all the Texas beers that they have on tap.
I think you're disrespecting those, man, for selecting
those.
Come on.
I mean, we're 300 and something episodes in. I think I've pretty much stuck with the rules up to now. But you know how it is when you've been with something for a long time, you start breaking rules. So it's really good though.
You have to be there for a while to break the rules. Listen, we're talking about something today that it seemed to come out of the gate strong. Mm-hmm. And that is at least the chatter and the rumors about Democrats running for statewide office. So there are three big statewide offices open. There's U.S. Senate. There's the comptroller, who's the chief financial officer for the state, and there's also the attorney general. Mm-hmm. Republicans are already stacked up for all three of these. The question is, are Democrats going to field competitive candidates? I think they will, but as you could tell from the title of our podcast here, the big question is Beto making a comeback. Huh. And it's not just Beto's name we're going to be talking about in this episode. There are a number of other people.
I think Democrats see a big opening here, at least the ones we've talked to see a big opening here, because they foresee a bruising primary between incumbent Senator John Cornyn and the Attorney General here in Texas, Ken Paxton, who looks like, you know, they're going to be challenging each other for that role. And I think that Democrats are predicting a bruising and very expensive primary on the Republican side. And they're hoping that they have a sort of, hobbled candidate coming out of the Republican side once the primary is over, and maybe they've got a split party there where, you know, maybe some Republicans will stay home. That's not what we've seen in past years here in Texas.
Sure.
But, you know, it doesn't hurt to hope if you're a Democrat.
Think about it, though. John Cornyn, he was a judge. He was Attorney General of the state. He went to the U.S. Senate.
He wasn't he in the Supreme Court, too?
He was on the Supreme Court, the judge.
Here in Texas?
Here in Texas. He hasn't lost a race.
Right.
His roots run deep here. Think about Ken Paxton.
He hasn't lost a race either, has he?
Ken Paxton hasn't lost a race either. So he was a state representative, and then he ran for Texas Attorney General. Mm-hmm. He got reelected even in the middle of a corruption investigation, even against three or four other Republicans.
He survived an impeachment?
He survived an impeachment. I just wonder why Democrats think that either of these guys might be vulnerable.
Well, I think that they're expecting one to injure the other enough in a primary for them to finish off the job and finally be elected to a statewide office here in Texas for the first time in decades.
So there are a handful of names already out there. People are already talking about a handful of names. If you watch our Sunday morning political program, Inside Texas Politics, or if you stream it, you might have seen some of these names. But we're going to spend this episode talking to some of these folks and also kind of gauging where they are on this. Mm. The first up is State Senator Nathan Johnson. He is a Democrat from Dallas. Mm. He's been in the state Senate for, I think, three sessions now? Mm. Two sessions. He's a four-year term. He just got reelected last year. Mm. So the question is he interested in leaving the state Senate and running for the United States Senate? There's a lot of differences. Mm-hmm. Politics are very different on the federal level. We had him on our program recently, and that's a question I asked him. Are you going to run for U.S. Senate? Here's what he said.
Senator, before we let you go, your name came up a few weeks back here on the program as a potential candidate for U.S. Senate. Is that something you would consider?
I am considering how I can be useful to the state after this session. I'm pretty focused on the session right now. It's very intense, but I am looking at potential statewide run. And there's a couple of different offices that I think might be a place where I could serve the people well. And I'm evaluating that.
And when should we expect an announcement? The summer or when?
Not this week.
Not this week. Senator, always good to see you. I appreciate the time, sir.
Thank you very much. Good to see you.
So that's State Senator Nathan Johnson. He's not going to make an announcement immediately because the legislative session is still going on until the 2nd of June. And, another name we've heard of is former Congressman Colin Allred. He ran against Ted Cruz mm-hmm. last year.
Well, and his big thing was, I think one of the big impediments for Colin Allred was he was very well known in the Dallas area,
sure.
But you got to be known statewide if you plan to win a statewide office like, for U.S. Senator. And that was a real challenge for him. I think that, Nathan Johnson could run into a similar issue. And this is a very expensive media market, Texas is. And so you got to be able to raise a ton of money to be able to get your commercials out there in all of these different parts of Texas and let people know who you are, what you're trying to do, and why they should take a chance on you.
Yeah, and when it comes to Colin Allred, we reached out to him when his name first surfaced a few months back. I texted him, hey, are you talking about possibly running for U.S. Senate again? I didn't hear back from him. I'd love to play a clip from the former congressman. I did not hear back from him. Mm. But I did reach out to Matt Engel. He runs the Lone Star Project. He used to work for Congressman Martin Frost, going mm-hmm. back a few minutes here. Mm-hmm. He's well-known in Democratic circles, Matt Engel is. And we had him on the program, and I was asking him the same question. Who are we looking at as possible contenders? Nathan Johnson especially. Here's what Matt told us. Do you think Nathan Johnson's going to get into this race?
I think he could. I think he's looking at it. I think if he does, he'll be a serious candidate, and he certainly would have the ability to beat Ken Paxton, who I think will be the Republican nominee, because I think John Cornyn is a dead senator walking.
You think so?
Absolutely. I think that it's really pathetic what he's doing. I mean, he can't put on his MAGA things now and pretend he always wore them, he's surrendering every shred of dignity he ever had. People know that he is kind of a throwback to the George W. Bush or the Kay Bailey Hutchison type Republican. Well, that doesn't exist anymore in Texas. There's no Texas Republican Party. There's a Trump National Party. And just the notion of a Texas Republican Party is nostalgia.
So when it comes to John Cornyn or even Ken Paxton on the Republican side, we're going to see what that primary looks like, whether it is that bruising. I cannot imagine it will not be
and expensive
of a primary, too.
Well, and too, though, you wonder just, how deep is the Democratic bench here in Texas? Again, they've been shut out of statewide elections for so long, so they haven't had a winner. But then at the same time, you'd think, are you over here sort of brooding and developing a bench? Are you developing a list of candidates who might be viable in some of these races that are ahead of you? And we're hearing a very familiar old name that we've heard a couple of times now.
If you've been watching any Democratic politics in the past few weeks, you've seen Beto O'Rourke hosting town halls all across the state. He's been to Amarillo. He's been to Midlothian. He's been to places in West Texas.
Places you wouldn't necessarily expect a Democrat
exactly.
to be
Wichita
campaigning,
Falls.
So to speak.
Amarillo, Wichita Falls, and Midlothian or Mansfield, I can't think of which one it is, in the south part of DFW, those are red areas.
Is that he's not running. He's not saying that he's
is
running
he not?
At this point. Well, it's a question
have you seen
of
this?
Semantics,
have you
I
seen
guess,
this
isn't
yet?
It? I hear about it. And so I'm wondering, you know, is this sort of, you know, trying to get out there and put out feelers, and are you sort of going through some old territory? Because we remember back in the Senate run that got him really close against Ted Cruz the first time around back in 2018, closer than any Democrat has been to that office. I think it made Ted Cruz, you know, maybe miss a few heartbeats there for a minute. And Beto O'Rourke was known for going out to these places that were not Democratic strongholds and trying to speak to people who Democrats don't normally campaign to.
O'Rourke was famous for visiting all 254 counties across the state. He's going back to a lot of these places. And, you know, here's one thing he's doing I think it's a little different. He's not going in and billing this as a Democratic town hall. He's opening this. He's going out of his way to say, listen, we want Republicans, we want independent Texans, we want Democrats. We're open to all to come here. And when you go to these red places like Amarillo, like Wichita Falls, there's going to be a lot of independents and a lot of folks who voted for President Trump, who voted for Greg Abbott, who voted for Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick. And he's had hundreds of people show up. Of course, if you've ever seen Beto O'Rourke, despite what you might think about his politics, he is a dynamic speaker.
Yep.
He's a very good communicator. And the big question right now is, okay, so Nathan Johnson, he's not yet ready to say whether he's going to run. It feels to me like he will launch a campaign for something. Colin Allred didn't return our calls. He did tell Gromer Jeffers from the Dallas Morning News he is considering it at least. But is Beto O'Rourke, is he the Democrats' best shot at winning a statewide seat again? We've seen this movie before.
Could the third time be the charm, though? I mean, he's tried for Senate already. He tried again for governor against Abbott the last time around. Yeah. Both times unsuccessful. The gap was wider that second time for the governor's race. I mean, does he take a third shot at it?
And that's the first question we had. We actually tracked him down in on the West Coast. He was out at in Southern California at USC about to give a commencement speech. And we caught him right before that, and we had to get right to the heart of the question here, right to the heart of the issue. Is he going to run again? Congressman, welcome back here. We got to start with the big question. You've been making these town halls all across the state and a lot of red areas as well. Do you plan on launching a campaign for Senate or for any other office?
You got to be where the people are. So that's where I think I could be most useful and most helpful right now, not as a candidate, not having my name on the ballot, but bringing people together and make sure that we're listening to one another. We're going to be in Dallas on Monday, actually in Garland at the convention center at 6 p.m. We want folks, Republican, Democrat, independent alike, to come out and talk about what's going on. And at these meetings that we've had in Wichita Falls and Mansfield and Amarillo just recently, we're hearing from veterans who are talking about 83,000 job cuts at the VA. Most of those cuts will go to veterans. We're talking about losing out on local schools with Abbott's voucher scam and cuts to IDEA and Title I funding from the Trump administration. And we're listening to people who are being hurt right now based on an administration that is not looking out for them. So there's real power in people coming together, being able to listen to one another. And then out of that, I think good things will flow.
But if you don't want your name on a ballot right now, what do you do with all this information that Texans are sharing with you?
You know, so many of these people who are showing up are also signing up to volunteer with Powered by People, where we're going out and registering young prospective voters and then staying in touch with them ahead of this next election. So there's organizing power that comes out of these meetings, and also just the ability for people no longer to be so isolated, so divided, so polarized, so alone. Coming out and coming together is real power. And we need that right now. We can't wait for the nominating process. We can't wait for 2026. People are being hurt right now. We have to show up for them right now. And that's why I'll be in Garland on Monday.
And the reason I ask you that this right off the top here is because your name has come up along with Colin Allred, State Senator Nathan Johnson, and potentially others that might challenge the Republican nominee for U.S. Senate next year. Right now, you're not looking at that, though?
I'm not looking at that. And as you pointed out, there are amazing people out there, both in and out of public office right now. You know, we could add in North Texas, we could add Clay Jenkins and Jasmine Crockett to the list. So we don't lack for candidates and for people who should be in these positions of public trust, including U.S. Senate and governor. But what we need to do now is to be there for people who are being hurt by this administration, both in Austin and in D.C. And that's why I'm holding these town halls all across the state.
One thing I've noticed about these town halls is you've kind of gone to great lengths to make sure these are not billed as Democratic town halls. These are nonpartisan, inviting Republicans, independents, Democrats, and everybody. What's the whole purpose behind that?
You know, I was just in Amarillo on Saturday, and as you know, Jason, it's split between two counties. Potter County voted for Trump 80%, Randall County 72% in the last election. But 750 people came out, and they crossed the political spectrum. There were folks wearing MAGA hats at that meeting because they're just as concerned about the fact that Trump cut USDA, which meant fewer truckloads of food coming to their food bank. They're concerned about three schools in Amarillo ISD they're going to have to shut down because of this voucher scam. And they're also concerned about a minimum wage that's $7.25 an hour, or the fact that not only have we not expanded Medicaid in Texas, President Trump is about to cut that program in Texas. So this is everyone coming together. We need the broadest possible coalition, a true united front, to make sure that we're delivering for our fellow Texans. And we've got to look past party affiliation or geographic difference or really any other dividing line. This is a time for us to come together.
But Texas is still a red state, though many people would say, no, it's a non-voting state, which I think I agree with that. But it's still a red state, though. Do you think that in 2026 that the Texans might be changing their minds?
You know, I think the only way we'll really know the answer to that question is if we show up everywhere. You know, it cannot just be the traditional places. You know, right. Obviously, Austin and Houston, the Rio Grande Valley, very important. We cannot take them for granted. But we also cannot afford to write off places like Mansfield or Garland or Amarillo or Wichita Falls. These people deserve to be listened to be heard, and to be fought for. And I promise you, if Democrats will show up, and not just in election years, but all the time, then people will start to show up for those Democrats who are fighting for those local schools and raising the minimum wage and treating people with the dignity and respect that they deserve.
Let me ask you about strategy here for just a moment, Congressman. Democrats across the state that I've talked to are really banking on the attorney general here, the Republican attorney general, Ken Paxton, defeating the incumbent Senator John Cornyn in the Republican nomination next spring. But what makes Democrats think that Paxton might be vulnerable? He still got reelected despite the criminal investigations against him.
He is very, very popular within the extremist section of the Republican Party. That's how he survives an impeachment vote of Republicans in the state house and then is not convicted in the Senate. Might have helped that Dan Patrick took, you know, millions of dollars from campaign donors who are in Paxton's corner. But he'll do just fine with the extremist element of the Republican Party. How he does with moderate Republicans, with independents, and certainly Democrats is another question altogether. But I'll tell you, Jason, whether it's John Cornyn, who's really been twisting in the wind, we have no idea what the guy believes in. He's turned out to be a real quisling in the Trump administration, or Ken Paxton, as extreme as it gets in Texas. I think Democrats have a real shot in 2026.
And to get back to the names just for a moment here, the big question that Democrats have always faced, you know, before you, I would say, is they just don't have a bench that is willing to take that next step. Do you think that the party needs to be doing something else with this new chairperson to recruit these candidates to come out and run?
We're lucky that we have a dynamic new chair in the Texas Democratic Party, Kendall Scudder. And I know that he really believes in a 254 fight on all fronts strategy. We can't do, Jason, to your point, the same thing the same way and expect a different result. That's how we've remained in the wilderness for 30 years politically in Texas. So it means that we contest at every level of the ballot, from justice of the peace to U.S. senator. And we don't just do it in 10 or 12 counties. We do it in all 254, because where Democrats have traditionally feared to tread, Republicans have stopped showing up, and there's no accountability or representation at all. Democrats have a golden opportunity right now, given how badly Abbott and Trump are hurting our fellow Texans, to show up and fight right alongside them and ultimately to win some of these important elections.
And Congressman, over the past few election cycles, we've seen that the Democrats seem to have their main message as anti-Donald Trump, you know, to go against Donald Trump on everything, as opposed to speaking to the working Texan who's out there. What do you think Democrats should be doing differently?
It's not enough to be in opposition. If we learned anything in 2024, the people of Texas, the people of America, wanted change. for so many, for too many, this country is just not working for them. So Democrats need to propose that kind of bold change that people are looking for, or else they're going to continue to choose the change that Donald Trump represented. That means that we can no longer live at $7.25 an hour. We need a minimum wage that is a living wage. It means that we don't just keep Medicaid from being cut. We expand it so every single Texan can see a doctor and be healthy enough and well enough to go to work or raise their kid or finish their education. It means that we are treating people with dignity wherever they are, regardless of who they voted for. No more judging you if you voted for Donald Trump. If you did, I understand that, and you're welcome as part of this movement and this coalition. We are going to fight for everyone. We're not just going to talk about it. You are going to see us do it. If we can accomplish that, and you can't do it at a distance, you can't do it with money, you can't do it with all due respect just on TV, you got to be there in person, like at these town halls, then we have a real shot of winning and delivering for the people of Texas that we want to serve.
I know it's been a minute since I've seen you in person, a few months back, since you were last in Dallas, but it sounds like you're extending an olive branch to those Trump supporters, people who have, you know, shunned the Democratic Party in the past.
Absolutely. We need everyone at this moment. And if you voted for change in 2024 because you thought that's what Donald Trump represented, I get it. I understand it. You did that in good faith. But if that change has turned out not to work for you because you haven't seen your wages go up, or in fact, prices are the only thing that are going up in your life right now, and you want something better, then you are welcome as a part of this coalition. You don't have to change your party or change your views or your values. If you believe in the Constitution, the rule of law, and this democracy, and you want to see America continue to come through as it has for 249 years, then we want to be with you. And that's why I'm showing up in Garland. Everyone is welcome, regardless of party affiliation or who you voted for, or even if you didn't vote at all the last time. We want to see you. We want to listen to you. We're going to bring a microphone for you to be able to talk into so that we can all hear your story and hopefully all work together in common cause for this country at its moment of truth.
Couple last questions here. People may not realize, but you do remain very active politically with Powered by People, your organization. You're registering people to vote, you're organizing and things like that. But you also organized a counter protest with students in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, the same day that the president, Trump, was there speaking on campus. What's the strategy behind that? Because in the past, I've known you to organize people to help on campaigns. You've registered people to vote. But now you're getting out here, seems like, back on the front lines again.
You know, it's actually a really encouraging story. Donald Trump had invited himself to the commencement ceremonies at University of Alabama, you know, trying in typical fashion to outshine the achievement and the celebration of those students there. Many of those students at University of Alabama reached out to me, and no one told them to. They weren't following orders from the DNC. They just said, hey, this isn't right. And they know that Alabama has been written off by the Democratic Party, written off by the Republican Party as well, because they can take them for granted, but they want to be heard and listened to. So I flew out to Birmingham, drove down to Tuscaloosa. 1,500 people came out to a public park. And again, we don't know, and it doesn't matter if they were Republicans or Democrats or independents. They were standing up to be counted for our country right now at this incredibly important moment. And Jason, it felt like a lot like Texas. You know, so many have written us off or taken us for granted, but we're just as important as any other people in any other state. We deserve to be heard and fought for. And so whether you're in Tuscaloosa or Tulsa, or you're in Garland, Texas, we are going to be there for you, because this is a defining moment for our country, and we cannot be found wanting. All of us have to show up, and we've got to come through. And the only way to do that is to be out there together.
Last thing for you, Congressman, give me the challenges and the opportunities. I think I know most of the challenges that Democrats face in the state. The Rio Grande Valley may be at the top of the list now, with the Democratic or with the Republican, you know, investments that they have made down there. What do you think that Texas Democrats need to be doing right now?
You know, I'm going to sound like a broken record to you, but we've really got to show up everywhere for everyone. I really think that the losses in the Rio Grande Valley are less to do with Trump and the Republican Party and more to do with Democrats. Plenty of exceptions to this, okay? But too many Democrats getting too lazy and too complacent and taking too many people for granted. Basically saying, and this is like a, you know, dirty open secret, that for far too long, Democrats have said, listen, if you're brown, if you're black, if you live in urban Dallas or the Rio Grande Valley, we can take you for granted. We're going to stop showing up and fighting for you and listening to you and working with you. We're going to go chase the soccer suburban mom in Collin County. And she's important, too. The thing is, everyone is important. You got to show up for everyone. And the other thing is that you can't do this on the cheap. You know, I may have raised and spent $80 million in the governor's race a few years back, but Greg Abbott raised and spent twice that amount of money, and that is before what Dan Patrick and Ken Paxton and every other statewide elected Republican and the independent expenditures. If we don't start investing in Texas, commensurate it with its importance and the 44 electoral college votes that we will soon have after the next census, then we're going to continue to lose in Texas. So it is showing up for everyone everywhere and investing in this state like it really matters. We do those two things, and Democrats will start to win.
And then the thing that piggybacks off that, I guess, is messaging to independents, who are the critical voters in all this, right?
And the message has to come from the very people that you want to serve. If you try to cook this up in a focus group in Austin, Texas, or Washington, D.C., even worse. If you're solely relying on polling data or what the consultants tell you to do, well, you're probably going to get the same result. But what I have found is that if you will show up and listen to people and really be with them and ensure that they know that they're being heard and that you even know that they exist. It's like the most fundamental basic human need. Do you know who I am and where I am and what I'm going through? If you will do that basic work, which again, I think far too many Democrats have failed to do, then you really have a chance of earning and winning those votes. And that goes for Democrats, Republicans, and to your point, those independents. And last thing, just to prove that this stuff works, you know, when we went to all 254 counties in 2018, at the end of the day, there were 500,000 Texans, 500,000 voters, who picked Greg Abbott for governor and picked me for U.S. Senator. They split their ticket. So you can pick up not just independents, but you can pick up Republicans as well if you'll show them that basic courtesy and respect of meeting them where they are. We've got to start doing that in Texas.
And we're not going to see your name back on a ballot, huh?
Who knows? Who knows what the future holds? Right now, I'm going to do everything that I can to be helpful, and that means showing up for people where they are. And that means tomorrow in Garland, Texas, at 6 p.m. at the convention center.
Congressman, it's always good to see you. Thank you for the time.
Thank you, Jason.
So I'm not going to run. I'm not going to run. I might run.
We'll see what the future holds here, Wheeler.
You know, the thing with him is, with Beto O'Rourke, is he definitely has the name recognition.
Yeah.
But what is that name recognition? How does it sit with different voters across Texas? Do they feel, again, like they might have felt back in 2018 when he was a novelty and they're willing to give that a try? Or has he been branded for having lost two statewide races and that name doesn't sit so well with those voters?
You know, in this conversation you just heard there, my takeaway is O'Rourke is moving towards the middle, a lot more towards the middle. Mm. Now, of course, he had that thing years ago when he was running for president. He said on the debate stage, right after the El Paso shooting at the Walmart there off I-10, yeah. When a number of people got murdered there by a mass shooter, that, hell yes, we're going to take away your guns. He has since said, I am a gun owner. Mm-hmm. We're not taking away anybody's guns. It's enshrined in the Second Amendment. But he's moving towards the middle.
But that'll still be clipped and rerun over and over again if he runs again. However, he has proven himself to be a good fundraiser in the past, and so you can counter that with your own, yeah. You know, ads out there and help define yourself a little bit and define your opponent as well if you decide to run.
He's a prolific fundraiser. He's a fantastic organizer, and he's been working on both as he's kind of been out of the headlines. He's coming back into the headlines, and he's not on the left side of the spectrum as much. I think he's a lot more in the middle, and that's going to be interesting. I've been told by other people who are on the Democratic side, I've said, listen, would we see a competitive race between like a Colin Allred and a Beto O'Rourke, or maybe Colin Allred, Beto O'Rourke, and Nathan Johnson? Hmm. And the insiders were telling me, you know, I think what you're going to have is you're going to have Colin or Beto or Nathan get on the phone with each other, and they're not going to, you know, make sure that, hey, do you want to run for this? Are you in the best position to run for this? Hmm. If so, then I'll look at potentially another seat. I didn't ask any of those three guys if they were going to do that. But that,
what were you doing?
Clearly not my job, right? But that kind of makes the most sense.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, they don't. need to necessarily go through a bruising campaign.
No, they have a common goal here, right. And that is just to get a right. candidate in there who actually pulls this off.
So we're 10 months away from the Democratic primary and from the Republican primary next March 2026 here. The legislature ends June 2nd, mm-hmm. and right after the legislature ends, you're going to see a lot of announcements from state lawmakers, from other people who are going to announce their campaigns for these different seats. I'm going to be watching to see what Nathan Johnson does, see if Colin Allred returns my call or says something publicly, at least, and see what Beto O'Rourke does. Beto O'Rourke's still on the road. He's going to be in Garland at the Garland Convention Center on Monday, the 19th or 20th. Mm-hmm. Of May, so he's still continuing his statewide tours. We haven't seen the last of him yet.
It seems to me that is the biggest name to watch in this. It's still the biggest name to watch on the Democratic
side. He's already out there. I mean, yeah. He says officially he's not running. He wants to listen to Texans. But, I mean, how many times have you heard that from people who are interested in running?
And absolutely.
You heard the second question. I said, well, you want to listen to Texans. What are you going to do with the information these Texans are telling you?
You're not just going to sit back in your lazy chair.
He's been a good organizer. He's a good communicator. I don't think we've seen the last of him.
Well,
but watch him to see if he moves a lot more towards the center.
And watch this race, because we certainly will be, as we do episodes, who knows, 350, 400 by then. This is going to be the U.S. Senate seat race to watch.
Once again, right?
Coming year.
Yeah. Once again. In 2018, it was nationwide. In 2024, when Ted Cruz was reelected, it was another national race to watch. In 2026, it will be again.
It's a real bellwether on, how are people feeling in the midterms about the Trump administration and about a Congress that has been 100% controlled by Republicans. That's going to be a real bellwether test. It's also going to be a test of the party. We've seen the Republican Party fracture here in Texas at certain times, come back together, fracture again. Yeah. Where does it go if we get this, the kind of primary that we're expecting to get on the Republican side?
You'll have state issues like school vouchers that'll already be happening. We'll see what happens with public school funding. There are a lot of other issues that I think could influence the Republican vote and whether independents, who decide every single election, which way independents vote.
There are going to be a lot of issues to get into, but it's going to be very personal too. I predict this one's going to be very ugly.
More personal than you and I get a lot of times, the jabs back and forth.
Can you believe somebody else does it even rowdier and dirtier?
We first started this at the end of this table here in 2019. Wheeler had like dark brown hair. If you notice now, it's a lot lighter.
Out, yeah.
I had dark brown hair too, I think, at the time.
But it's funny how that works
minute,
over
right?
the years. Yeah, what's that saying?
A special shout out here to Chibo Divino, West Dallas at Sylvan and I-30. Fantastic place, a lot of good Italian food. Texas beer on tap as well, too.
I'm going to get back to that Texas beer next time, but this beer I'm already has been really good.
Cheers, my friend.
By the way, on our, 6 years almost now?
6 years. And thanks for being with us along the way, too. We appreciate it. We'll see you next week.